I'd now like you to meet the man who knows more about this stuff than any other man or woman alive today. I say this unreservedly. John Crampner is the author of Creamy and Crunchy, An Informal History of Peanut Butter, The All-American Food. And John, welcome to RN First Bite.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michael.
John, the birth of the peanut is really also a relationship the Americans had with the slave trade. Is it not true to say that if peanuts hadn't come with slaves from Africa, we wouldn't even be having this conversation?
That's entirely possible. Although peanuts are native to South America, they were taken by Spanish and Portuguese explorers to Africa, and they first came to the United States on slave ships. And it's really interesting because the American Peanut Council, which is the leading umbrella trade organization for the peanut industry, in some of its promotional materials, it talks about peanuts coming to the United States on sailing ships, which makes it sound like they were participants in a regatta.
And peanuts themselves, when they first arrived and started grabbing a foothold on the landscape, were mostly seen, I think, as animal feed and also the kind of the cheap food for the peanut gallery. And so there was that whole sort of stigma attached to them that gradually wore away as we got to the early 1900s.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the primary original uses for peanuts were as food for hogs, for the pigs. And the way that they became sort of more popular is just that around the time of World War I, the southern cotton crop in the U.S. was decimated by the boll weevil, and the farmers needed some alternate crop, so they went with peanuts. They wanted a more lucrative way of selling it than as hog feed, so they pushed peanut butter, which is one reason it really took off in the United States.
And isn't there a monument in a town that you've got a photograph of in the book to the boll weevil from peanut farmers saying, thank you, boll weevil, for destroying cotton as an industry?
That's the most extraordinary thing, and it's absolutely true. It's in Enterprise, Alabama, and there is a monument to the boll weevil, and in all probability, it's the only Greek revival-style statue in the world which is dedicated to a pestilential insect.
It's extraordinary. I'll try and get an image of it up on the RN First Bite website. Now, who invented peanut butter? Because even that's clouded in controversy.
It is, and peanuts in their cultivated form, they're native to the eastern foothills of the Bolivian Andes, so you get the Incas grinding up peanuts several thousand years ago, but they would mix it with cocoa. It was kind of coarser than modern peanut butter. In its modern incarnation, it really dates to the American Midwest in the 1890s, and as you correctly say, there is some controversy about that. Some people say that the father of peanut butter is a man named John Harvey Kellogg, whose name you and your listeners might recognize. It's part of the Kellogg cereal dynasty. They had a sanitarium in Battle Creek, Michigan. And one of the things they did was he took out, in 1895, the first patent on a peanut butter-like substance. And I say peanut butter-like because he boiled his peanuts, whereas really the flavor of peanut butter is the flavor of roasted peanuts. The other candidate, and the one that I lean towards, is a man named George Bayle, B-A-Y-L-E, and he was a snack food maker in St. Louis. He made pretzels and other kind of snack foods like that, and he, as early as 1894, claims to have been making peanut butter, but there are the Kellogg people, there are the Bayle people, and whenever they get together, you can have some very boring arguments.
I can imagine. But still, it's interesting to think about that because Kellogg himself and the dynasty he founded, of course, is well known in Australia too because of the cereal brands that have permeated our food culture and also the peanut butter. Because what's interesting about this, I never sort of had thought this through before, the sanitarium brand, which we have on our shelves even now, was born out of, and I think it is the oldest peanut butter in the world, and the name derives from the Kellogg Sanitarium in Battle Creek.
That's That's absolutely correct. The Sanitarium brand was founded by a man named Edward Halsey, who, as you correctly say, had been working in John Harvey Kellogg's sanitarium in Battle Creek, Michigan. He emigrated to Australia, Mr. Halsey did, and by 1898, he started making Sanitarium brand peanut butter in a small bakery in the Melbourne area. Australia does have the bragging rights to the oldest continuously made brand of peanut butter in the world.
But John, maybe we shouldn't be bragging, because I know you tasted Sanitarium. You tasted many types of peanut butter around the world for the writing of this book. And may I quote you in saying, "The dullest peanut butter I tasted of the many I sampled for this book. Shame on you. This was the original peanut butter and you've slammed it."
I wasn't going to say anything because I did not want to come across as an ugly American.
Well, I've said it for you. I've outed you. So I want you to respond to this. What's so bad about Sanitarium peanut butter?
It wasn't bad per se. It was very bland.
But tell me, if I was to eat peanut butter from its birthplace, whether it be with George Bale or with Kellogg back then in the late 1800s compared to now, what changes would I have noticed between then and now?
Quite a few, actually. Of course, in its essence, peanut butter is and always has been ground-up peanut, but there are some key differences. 100 years ago, the main peanuts used to make peanut butter were called either Spanish or Virginia peanuts, which are more flavorful than the kind of peanuts used now. Now they use what are called runner peanuts. The big companies like them because they're very prolific, they roast evenly, but they are a bit blander. Another difference is that when peanut butter was originally made, it was all natural or old-fashioned or unstabilized, whereas now 90% of peanut butter, including Sanitarium, of course, is stabilized, so there's no oil separation.
And this is the problem with peanuts in their natural state, isn't it? When you start to grind them, the oil separates from the solids and rises to the top of the jar.
Right. And a lot of people don't like having to play with their food, in effect, and having the oil and the solids. And so, as I mention in my book, the whole point of stabilizing is to keep them together. But it's really surprising to me that only 10% of the market now is natural or old-fashioned, because to me, the peanut flavor and aroma is much more intense that way. And finally, the third difference is now, the two textures of peanut butter are creamy and crunchy, which is why I titled my book that way. But crunchy didn't come on the market until 1935. But the other texture that you had, and going back to the 1890s, it was called kind of coarse or grainy. It was midway between creamy and crunchy. And they did that because there wasn't as much oil separation. And so that was a way to still have natural peanut butter with less oil separation. So there really have been quite a few changes over the 100-plus years of peanut butter's existence.
There's an American icon who was very partial to smooth peanut butter, especially when fried with other tasty treats into a sandwich. From John Krampner's book, here's the Elvis spread.
6 strips of thick-cut bacon, 1 1/4 cups of creamy standard peanut butter, 2 ripe medium bananas, 1 tablespoon of unsalted butter at room temperature, and 1 tablespoon of honey. Fry the bacon in a non-stick skillet set over medium-high heat until the strips are very crispy. Set aside. Place the peanut butter, bananas, butter and honey in a food processor fitted with a chopping blade. Process until very smooth. Chop the bacon, then add it to the food processor and pulse 2 or 3 times to get it evenly distributed in the mixture. Store in the refrigerator for up to 4 days. Bring the spread to room temperature before using.
John Krampner, back to you. Elvis Presley is surely a classic example of how fattening peanut butter can be.
Well, it's true that, peanuts are half oil, so they're half fat, but most of that fat is unsaturated. About half of it is monounsaturated, a third is polyunsaturated. So it's for the about 15% is saturated fat. So by and large, the fat in peanuts is healthy. There was actually a book that came out a number of years ago, and you'll probably think I'm pulling your leg, called The Peanut Butter Diet. And the theory there is peanut butter is a stick-to-your-ribs food. So if you eat it in moderation, which can be the challenge, then it kind of just wipes out your appetite for hours. And so in that sense, it's a good food. It's also worth mentioning peanuts are, they're very high in plant protein, which makes them popular among vegetarians. In addition, it's rich in antioxidants. It's high in resveratrol, which is the chemical in wine that scientists think helps to ward off cancer. It's got a lot of vitamins. So I'm not trying to shill for the peanut or peanut butter industries. But assuming you don't have an allergy and that you don't eat too much of this stuff, it will do pretty well by you.
Clearly, you won't be eating too much of the Sanitarium brand, having founded the dullest in the world. You see, I'm not leaving this alone, John. But if you were going to be given one form of peanut butter to take to the grave, what would it be?
Mm-hmm. As a peanut butter purist, what I can unequivocally say is I am a crunchy man. And I know that the American conservative political philosopher William F. Buckley, he was actually buried with a jar of peanut butter and his favorite remote control from his television, I think. So if I'm going to take a jar of peanut butter into my casket, it's going to be crunchy.
I'm with you. We can share that casket.
There we go.
John, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on RN First Bite.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
John Krampner, author and Australian peanut butter critic. His book, Creamy and Crunchy, An Informal History of Peanut Butter, the All-American Food, is published by Columbia. You can find out more and leave your reactions on the RN First Bite website. And that's us for now. Next time, come with us to Paris as we search the streets for the traditional French cuisine whose days could be numbered. Maria Tickle produces the program. Melissa May does the technicals. I'm Michael McKenzie, and I'll talk to you on Twitter and Facebook. Just got to go and make a sandwich.